You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble. Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And we've got a lot of stuff up for discussion this week, including a revisit to Doctor Who type stuff. Somebody has pointed out that there's a Metal Gear Solid movie in the making, a couple of things, and a feature that could very well, once we've got through the discussion, leave you feeling maybe traumatised and maybe fearful for your sanity.
Again.
Again.
What's that?
The feature.
Sanity. Sanity. What's that?
Well, what's that? Oh, that's a good point. If you've watched some of the films that we might be talking about, then you'd certainly be leaving yourself questioning. Very much so. First up, again, it's like almost every season. There's rumours about whoever's playing the current O, probably on the verge of quitting, so long as it's not his first year normally. So if he's been doing it a while, so some people are once again sort of saying Matt Smith could be very well quitting Doctor Who.
He's actually apparently said this in an interview at Empire, hasn't he, that he doesn't want to get burnt out and that he is getting a bit fed up with sort of all the 18-hour shoots and stuff. And he has been out to LA apparently and is actually he might have actually a movie lined up for Hollywood next year.
I just think my problem with it was just the sort of entertainment website is just kind of overhyping it. It's like, of course he's going to be quitting it at some point. I can't imagine anyone wanting to do it. How many seasons did like Ted Baker do in the end?
Tom Baker.
Seven years.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be in that role for 7 years.
He got slightly fed up with it as well.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he got very fed up with it. I mean, he's going to quit, and if it does happen next year, then it happens next year, I suppose. You know, it will be a shame. I don't know. I mean, Emily, you said something last week about one of the BBC controllers not being very happy with sci-fi anyway.
Yeah.
Has made me sort of alarm bells go off, because the rumour in the 80s when it originally got cancelled was that if the controller didn't get his way, by Gallifreyan law, a Time Lord can only have 12 lives. So the idea was to let him regenerate until he's got no more lives left, and then they can't take it anywhere further. And Matt Smith is Doctor 11, so if he does quit next year, that means we are on the 12th incarnation.
Do you know what? The optimist in me goes, oh, they can retcon that. It'll be fine. But that's
well,
there's
bound to be some way to retcon it.
Yeah.
It hasn't stopped them so far.
No.
I mean, technically speaking, though, I mean, if you threw in the Doctor Who skit that happened in comics, was it Comics Relief or Children in Need the one time? And Richard E. Grant became the Doctor.
Yeah.
Are we technically, with that included, on the 11th or 12th Doctor?
Well, 13th, because you could throw in Peter Chinnan as well, can you? With the movies in the 70s.
I mean, theoretically, one way to retcon it would basically be to have some sort of plot line where he goes back in time and to David Tennant's kind of period, and instead of regenerating into Matt Smith, he does something else and regenerates into somebody else, I suppose.
Or the fact that whereas it's now been very proven that long-term exposure to the TARDIS is potentially bad for your health, or good for your health, depending on your point of view. So
it's got lots of MacGuffin particles.
Exactly. So
and they,
yeah,
exactly. They managed to create a half-human, half-Time Lord Doctor as well, didn't they?
Yep.
So, you know, there are plenty of things there.
That they have plenty of MacGuffins available to them to make it go beyond 12 Doctors and the main TV series. The MacGuffins are plentiful.
And I have to say, Saturday's episode, that has got to be the most original Dalek story I've seen in years.
I will definitely say I agree with that. I don't tend to like the Daleks episodes much, and actually like that one.
I have to say, looking at the girl that was like actually kind of playing the girl, I was convinced that she it's a new companion.
That is the debut of the actress who's playing the new companion from the Christmas special.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it is. It is the same girl, which throws up a lot of questions now.
Time drop.
Should be interesting.
I was less pleased with the episode, I think, because there are a few things that were I was just screaming at the TV. Just
Can we just go that now that there could be a spoiler issue for those of you who haven't seen the episode yet? So spoiler alert.
Yeah, and also if you haven't seen it, just go and see it.
Everybody's seen it, haven't they? What's going on?
Can I just say that I'm calling it now. The theme for this new series is Everybody Forgets the Doctor. I'm calling it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. That was quite a nice little twist at the end there as well, wasn't it? Quite like that.
Of course, all that amounts to really is it's another reboot.
Yeah.
They've rebooted the Daleks because they've got all the types in the room again. Oh, and also, I don't know if anyone noticed, but you know, right near the end where he has to go through that ward, for want of a better term.
The intensive care.
Yeah, where it's the, they don't usually wake up for anyone. One of the Daleks, at least one of the Daleks, was an original sort of 60s, 70s
yes.
Dalek, because it had the tiny ear lights, whatever you want to call them.
Which I thought was pretty cool.
I thought that was a very nice little reference.
Mm.
And it's one of the things I like about Moffat. He seems to be far more aware of the whole history, the lineage of the stories than Russell T. Davis, who just did what he wanted. Oh, we won't possibly do that. Did I say we wouldn't possibly do that? We're doing it anyway. Why? Because I said so. I'm the one who runs the show.
No, it's good to have him back on screen for at least 4 more weeks.
Yes.
So I think what we're saying here is that people shouldn't be panicking that Matt Smith probably wants to quit being the Doctor. But be perhaps wary of any intentions that people in charge of drama at the BBC may or may not have.
To be fair, he didn't even say that he was quitting. He said that he can't do it forever.
Which is perfectly true.
Yeah.
It is perfectly true. And it's one of those little things that because it's Doctor Who and because the first Doctor, Mr. Eccleston, went after the comeback, quit after a single season, is just hanging over it like that.
Yeah.
Mm. And people are waiting for any kind of hint that he might not continue, he might not finish this series, or he might not be there for the next few years. Especially with how many series did Tennant do? Was it 3?
3 or 4, wasn't it?
4, if you count the kind of mini kind of storylines that like
our specials.
The specials,
they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
I try not to count the specials, especially the ones with Catherine Tate.
Catherine Tate was great as Dr. Donna. I love that character.
No.
I think her character progression was good, but she was kind of to begin with.
To be fair, her character, fine. The actress, not fine.
Okay, fair enough.
I just do not like her. I just can't like her. I cannot stand Catherine Tate.
I have to side with Retroid on this. I have issues with watching her on the television screen. She makes me somehow just makes me want to.
There's just something which causes violence, isn't there?
Yeah, just a little bit. Sadly, I mean, I got through you know, the series and all that, but at the same time, it was a steep appreciation curve to finally be able to deal with the character once she'd matured a bit. It just seemed extra exasperated by the actress herself, which seems really petty.
Just her appearing on screen can send me into rage. I just don't know what it is about her. I can't stand the woman. As I was saying, you know, the character, especially the fact that she wasn't making puppy eyes at the Doctor all the time, like the other companions had up until then. Yeah. It's just he's an alien. It's like making, you know, puppy dog eyes at a puppy. It's wrong. You know, he's a Time Lord. He's an alien. He has two hearts. He regenerates. He's not human.
There are cross-species issues.
Yeah. It's like Dr. Livingstone setting up home with a chimp.
Effectively. I don't want to think about that, man.
No. Don't think about all the technical things about it. But it's just that's what Doctor Who is to me. He is an eccentric, hyper-intelligent alien who happens to be fond of humans. And the whole, all the companions had to fall for him, that really got on my wick. So I was pleased with Donna, that she didn't. So that was a positive for the character, but the massive negative was Catherine Tate.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, fair enough.
Just as an interesting question, who would you have cast instead of Catherine Tate for the character of Don?
Anyone. almost anyone other than Catherine Tate. Oh, wow. I thought. Oh, now I can't remember the name of the character, but the girl in the first Angels episode.
Oh, wasn't that the girl from space?
Sparrow or something?
Mm-hmm.
I think, no.
That was the actress from space, right? From the comedy Spaced.
No.
You mean the younger girl?
Yeah.
I think I know who you mean.
The one who, would, her friend disappeared and... I would have loved her to have been a companion.
Hmm. Because
she was smart for a start, so yeah, I would have just thought she was she would be perfect companion material. Yeah. So I was disappointed when that was it for her.
Well, this is what's going to be interesting about this new companion. If it's going to be the same character that we saw on Saturday, the fact that she's a genius.
Yeah,
could be quite interesting.
Well, you say same.
I was convinced. I was convinced that that was the Doctor's daughter regenerated. If you remember that,
The clone.
Oh yes, so. Yeah, Doctor. Yeah. That's actually played by David Tennant's wife.
I thought it was Peter Davidson's.
Peter Davidson's daughter. Yeah, it is. But I think they got married as well. David Tennant and her got married. I think.
All right.
Possibly. I could be wrong.
Keeping it in the Doctor Who family.
Yeah.
That's going to be a very confusing family photo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I think it was, anyway. Because he was going out with Sophia Miles, wasn't he? From
The Girl in the Fireplace.
Yeah. But then I believe he started dating Peter Davison's daughter. But I could be wrong on that. It could be just me in my little dream world.
Okay. Something that's maybe set a bit more in reality than... I want to say rocked, but actually it's been a known issue for a while. But websites who were asked, who say they can do iPhone app and game reviews for money.
Oh, yeah.
I think, was it Andrew Smith of Spilt Milk Studios had a talk about this? Or am I thinking of the wrong Andrew Smith? Yeah. It's how do I put this? In a way, it was kind of news to me, because the last thing I heard was not necessarily publishers, but certainly PR people for like various apps and games asking sites to do reviews for them, and they'd give something in exchange, like not just the game, but like, I know, like iTunes vouchers or something, which was dodgy in right. of itself.
Yeah.
But this angle, so basically websites saying, we'll do a review for your stuff if you pay us, that's a new angle that I previously hadn't been aware of.
Yeah, that's not dodgy at all.
Nah, I think we should do that for the Eurovision Song Contest. Give the judges a few bit of money, we might actually win.
Yeah. I thought they already did that.
Well, it's clearly not working if we are. I'm not sure what to think. I mean, obviously, it's actually in a way... How to put this again? I think one of the problems... Obviously, none of the sites that had allegations laid against them in the computer and video games article I saw, they weren't names of sites that I recognised. I mean, not that I'm somebody who goes around buying iPhone apps. I have an Android. But it was... How do I put this? It was... So shocking because I hadn't actually heard about it happening this way around before, and be also perhaps symptomatic of an issue that will certainly be hitting more, even away legitimate sites, and it's perhaps a weathering for an issue that is hitting sites, which is basically that it costs money to run a site, and currently readers aren't exactly providing that money for sites because advertising from ads doesn't tend to work out because readers don't tend to actually interact with ads because they just blank them out. And unless you've got a paywall, ads about the only way you can monetize a site, unless you ask for donations outright. So
yeah.
I haven't heard of any, and when I say mainstream, any sort of regular sort of game sites from sort of big to sort of like small being asking to do reviews for money.
Yeah, there are always the accusations floated about if fanboys don't like a result.
Yeah,
but this is something a bit new.
Yeah, I think the issue that's been a problem for traditional game sites, magazines previously, has been when publishers have kind of like pampered in a way. Reviewers, like they've gone to like a sort of exclusive sort of review events or whatever, where they're like locked up in a hotel.
Yeah.
To play or, like a weekend, and they get given swag.
Goodie bags and things like that. Yeah.
That's been a previous issue, but then that's more a thing of AAA development, not something like apps.
Or like Microsoft the other year at E3.
What did they end up doing?
They gave everybody in the press conference an Xbox 360, didn't they? One of the new black ones.
Yes, they did when they announced it. I remember that.
Yeah.
Everyone who was in the room got one.
Yeah, they got a massive applause when they announced that at the end of the press conference.
And of course, it generates a lot of goodwill.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, so while the whole cash rifle reviews isn't necessarily a widespread issue, I think it certainly throws light onto perhaps the issue of, say, kickbacks for either side, be they publishers or journalists, when it comes to writing about titles, because it does present the issue of whether or not any reviews or commentary on a product are going to be trustworthy, because one end's been bribed somewhere along the way
exactly.
to producing the content. I was going to say, one of the accusations that I read in the computer and video games article, though, was that some sites that were charging for reviews were saying that they don't guarantee a good review either, as if that would somehow balance things out. And considering the kind of like grim dog eat dog world of app development, It's not exactly good for developers, I would have thought, either, having that kind of situation.
I think as soon as you bring cash into the equation in that way, and not just whatever it is free for review, you're bringing in the whole question of, well, if you can't guarantee a good review for our item that we're paying you to review quickly...
Why should we pay you?
Yeah, joeblogs.com, over there... is saying, you know, we'll make sure that we, you know, we sugarcoat something for you, you know, for the same price or a little bit less. Why don't we just take our money over there if you are not going to give us preferential treatment?
It's basically opening up like a marketplace, isn't it, where you can be haggled. You know, well, Joe, so-and-so says he can do it for $75 and he'll give me 5 stars. What am I getting for 150?
You know, it seems like it's part of the whole blurring between games journalists. And I know a lot of people would sneer at that term anyway. I know some game journalists who would sneer at the term, even though they are. And it's the professional journalists, professional reviewers, and bloggers. And that grows from the whole problem of plants on forums, where you'd have someone who would register and they might do one or two posts about, you know, whatever it is, and go, oh, yes, I like this, I like that. Oh, this fantastic game. Have you lot played it? It's awesome. Why don't you get it? It's available now. Look, it's got all these good reviews. And I do not work for the company. Yeah. No, not directly.
I have to admit that that marketing tactic is one that's widespread throughout not just games, but various other industries, not just entertainment.
Oh, it's not just everything. Games, but I think it's part of the problem with games being so online-centric. There are a lot of forums which will, you know, be dedicated to games, as games discussions. If you're playing games, online games especially, and app-type marketplace games, you're going to be online. You're going to be, more likely to hang around on forums, more likely to look around for reviews.
But what's crazy about this whole reviews thing, I mean, obviously the Apple marketplace especially is quite cutthroat, because it's really hard to get in anywhere near the top. But I would have thought the other issue of the fact is that a lot of casual app users, which is most phone users, don't tend to pay too much attention to reviews. But it's not reviews that's obviously appearing on the App Store, is it? Reviews that's appearing on the web. Yeah. So it's not even going to influence in-store purchases.
No,
I mean, with the apps, I tend to find it's normally word of mouth. A friend has downloaded this. He's, you know, going on about it. So you download it out of curiosity and then you recommend it to another friend and it sort of escalates like that during your lunch break or your smoking break. It's not something you tend to read about much on websites.
I think it's more to do with awareness and getting people to notice these things. Such and such a site. I've seen that on the front page of these sites, you know, 3 times. I wonder if it's any good. Just that kind of thing. There are a lot of people who will only pay attention to how many times they've heard of a game, whether it sounds, even from the title sometimes, whether it's something that they might be interested in.
Yeah.
And they'll go and buy it after that, and it doesn't matter if there are reviews, but of course they have to hear about it first.
But then,
can I just also say that is very true considering the low cost of most kind of iPhone games. There's kind of hardly any risk to buying something, but you just kind of need to have heard that title before.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it does.
Exactly.
But then looking at the addresses and stuff of the sites that got mentioned in the sort of computer video games article, it was clear that these aren't sites that people who are interested in reviews, who are actively looking for reviews and stuff, tend to be engaging with. Because, I mean, reviews typically are one of the least read items of content for a lot of sites, or certainly items that don't tend to get that well read. People tend to be interested more in actual news and features. So, like, they'd rather, if it's a review, it's like they'd rather have maybe just a quick summary type thing, so basically a score, if they're going to actually research it at all. And none of these sites are recognisable sites, so I think what really needs to be to help developers in a way, is to make them realise that, you know, they sort of first time or sort of new developers, that they basically just don't, they don't need to rely on sites like this.
Yeah.
And that, and that they, you know, they can talk to legitimate sites that review apps and stuff, you know, if they want something reviewed.
I'm not sure whether the same tactics would really work with like bigger sites, because I think the bigger sites would have much more to lose if, you know, something like this came out.
Yeah, but I'm saying is that developers need to realise that, that they don't need to rely on sites like that to get reviews done.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. There's sites that don't use tactics like that to get content out there.
Sorry to interrupt there. I'm just wondering, because I'm looking at the article, and I'm wondering if these sites sell their reviews to anyone else.
You syndicate them. Yeah.
Or if they're just there to get the minimum number of reviews required on Metacritic. Because after all, a game won't really appear on Metacritic unless it has, you know, a critical mass, a minimum.
Exactly. Yeah.
True.
So that's what I'm thinking there, because those sites don't necessarily need to be read. Yeah, they just need to be able to say, we review this, we give it this score, here's our website address. And by extension, we're adding value to this game because it now has an average.
I think this is something that we're going to have to keep an eye on and see if anyone else comes forward with information about it, really. Next bit of news was that, other than the fact that a Metal Gear Solid regular sort of game was announced, which was, what was that called? Got announced last week.
Oh,
is that the one that's meant to be an MMO?
No, there's a proper game coming out as well.
Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, was it?
Ground Zeroes.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, Ground Zeroes. I think it's Ground Zeroes. I'm not sure. It's not a series I follow. But the idea that there's a movie coming out has me slightly interested, because I do like some of the tie-in movies for games, tie-in movies specific, and it's slightly related to what we're talking about later, but tie-in movies.
I'm really interested with the producer as well.
Who is it?
Avi Arad, who was the producer of X-Men and Spider-Man.
Ah, yeah. Hmm. Is that the new Spider-Man, or the
90s? Tobey Maguire. Tobey Maguire, I believe.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
So, but yeah, these one of the original people who brought the comics back to theatres in big style with Stan Lee, and he's now picking up Metal Gear Solid. And he, at the conference, he did actually state that for many years he was fought to bring comics to theatres, and video games are the comics of today. So,
what I'm not clear about is whether or not we're about to ending up with a film that's a tie-in, like I've just said. Or which would be obviously like Resident Evil Generation, and the second one of those is coming out. Or if it's an adaptation. That was the one thing I wasn't clear about.
Yeah, I don't think there's many details been announced really, apart from it is going to be made into a movie, from what I've seen around. There hasn't been, because it was announced at the 25th anniversary event.
In Japan last week,
But there doesn't seem to be that many more details actually available. I'm actually quite intrigued. I've not really played many of the Metal Gear Solid games, but everybody tells me how great they are, and Snake would be brilliant. And it, for me, that franchise does seem to stand out as a very good entry into movies. There's a very good backstory to it all. If they could.
Of course, I am just tempted to say, oh, they're taking the game bit out.
Yeah, there's been a lot of responses online like that. I've already got Metal Gear Solid the movie. It was called Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah. He does like his films. He does like his narrative. He does like... You can see exactly where it was always going to go. He always wanted some kind of film.
Yes, he did. So it'll be quite interesting to see what happens with that, you know.
Well, I mean, because I think the original games were at least partly inspired by kind of films, even if it's just like the iconography. So it's kind of a going full circle now, really, hasn't it?
Yes.
No, the thing is here, if it's getting a, it's a Western adaptation, isn't it? It's a Western team that they're talking about.
I'd imagine so.
Yeah. Now, I have most of the Metal Gear Solid games. I haven't actually played them. I just picked them up cheap because, you know, when I've seen them and I go, oh, right, that's got a good reputation, I'll pick that up. And I've never got around to playing them. But what from what I understand of it, the stories are properly batshit.
Yes.
So how exactly is that going to work in a Western film? Because one of the things about them is that the stories are very Japanese, as in they're very mad.
Well,
so I'm not exactly sure how that's going to
I think work. We could discuss that further in a little bit, actually, because that's a good point. So I'm gonna shuffle us along. ABC has ordered a pilot for a S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series with Whedon behind the actual pilot. Everybody raise their
hands.
Cautious, very cautious. First thing that springs to mind is who's going to play Nick Fury? But look, it's going to be quite interesting, especially with Joss Whedon being behind it all. You know, that's going to make it sort of spark if it's going to spark on the TV. That definitely got a thumbs up for me for that, because at least they haven't gone to somebody totally different who doesn't know what they're doing. You know.
Exactly. It's Whedon who has me excited about this.
Yeah,
I think the real question is that will they basically, because it seems like there's going to be kind of a shoot off of obviously like Avengers kind of movies kind of thing. Will this actually kind of be set in the same universe, and will it actually kind of weave into the movies?
Oh.
That would be cool if it did, though. It could actually concentrate on some of the, you know, some of the lesser characters from the movie. You know, some of the S.H.I.E.L.D. operatives that we saw 5-10 minutes of, and, you know, there's a couple there I thought, oh, that's quite an interesting character. Cool. And then just disappeared.
They also don't have to set it after the events of the Avengers film that came out this summer. Okay. There's a lot of space for pre-film time that they could occupy safely and not cause retcon situations.
Yeah, definitely. We could see the birth of S.H.I.E.L.D. if anything.
Mm.
Yeah, which would be pretty cool.
I'd certainly be worried about the thing I'd be worried about for S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series is them creating a situation where retconning suddenly becomes an issue. It'd be nice if it tied in with all the Marvel films that have obviously come out that are in that universe at the moment.
Yeah.
But I think the way they've respected it so far, I would touch wood that they realise that and they won't do that. I mean, you know, it's not Warner Brothers doing their own thing in DC, is it? So you know, it's Marvel, and they do seem to be keeping everything in line with one another, so it's just very good. Not going off on a tangent in some other direction.
Apart from obviously Spider-Man, which is owned by Sony still.
Yeah.
It's
just please, just give it to Whedon.
Yeah.
Hands off. Yeah, just make sure there's people who actually give a toss about the properties and have got a clue on how to do it, and not just, you know, please do it this way, or we're not happy with you doing it that way, you know, please do it another way. It's just, let them get on with it, give them the budget, give them the time, and they will reap rewards.
But what would probably happen, though, is that if it does get past pilot stage, is that Whedon will probably be responsible for, like, the arcs for the season. That he would not necessarily be responsible for the writing of individual episodes, obviously.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, when it came to his TV series anyway, he was in the driving seat.
Mm.
But you always do have it with TV series where it's like the main story arcs are kind of governed by the head writer, and then, you know, people below obviously just write the individual episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so that and obviously, and it tends to be that a lot of the writers end up becoming producers on series, and some of the actors as well, if they actually end up giving some input.
Oh yeah, and directors.
Yeah. It's quite weird. You can slowly, as a series evolves, end up with more and more credits in some ways.
Yeah.
As more and more individuals become involved. Okay, now that we've talked about all that lot, I think, as we were hinting at whilst we were talking about Metal Gear Solid movie, that we should get on to our main topic of discussion for this week, which is, now that comic books have been fairly successfully translated to the big screen, is it now time for video games to get the same service? Yeah. I open the floor.
No, I think there's definitely the possibility there now for it, if they treat it the same respect that they have done in the comic books.
I think
the thing that's behind it.
Yeah. I think video games need to be done very, very carefully on screen.
Yes.
Because of basically the inherent logic within video games is different to most other media forms. You know, stuff like, I mean, some, what I refer to as kind of video game style movies, stuff like Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and Sucker Punch, where there's kind of obviously an evolution of the character fighting more and more difficult people, and not just kind of fighting like bosses, but fighting kind of almost just kind of general kind of problems and whatnot as well.
Yeah.
And now I really.
That's one of my most favourite films of all time, I think, Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, it was one of the first films that we watched. And I thought, my mother, who is reasonably into her sci-fi and things like that, she's got, you know, Buffy box sets and you know, Star Trek box sets and things like that. And she gets, you know, she's got all the Marvel films. As an example, on DVD, so, you know, she likes all those. But Scott Pilgrim, I was sitting there watching it with my wife, and I just turned to her and said, our parents would not get this at all. This is one of the first films I've ever seen where it's just, no, they would not get it. We loved it as well.
So. Yeah, I suppose it's a case of whether or not they concentrate on adapting the narrative that might be contained in the original text, or if they try to incorporate any of the mechanics, for want of a better word, that might appear in it.
Yeah.
Thinking of previous, because there's a lot of existing adaptations to consider, some more successful than others, maybe not at the box office, but at least in achieving what they set out to do. Anyone want to go with one of the bad ones first, though, that left them crying in a corner, weeping?
Yeah.
Go on.
Now, when it comes to the whole narrative structure, I'm really not sure if games would transfer.
It depends on the game. I thought Max Payne they did really well with.
Like Max Payne would.
Really good. That's what I mean. You need to have the respect there for the narrative and be able to do it. I mean, Street Fighter just scraps straight away because you're not going to get away with that because there's not much narrative there.
Yeah. But the one which I keep hearing about with, ooh, wouldn't a film adaptation of this be good? And I'm thinking, it would have to be quite different. Would be Bioshock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that took the narrative structure of games, the linear structure of the story and you playing it, and it made it part of the story, part of the plot line in an incredibly good way. That was just such, you know, that moment when you're about to meet Andrew Ryan. I can't see how a film would really do that.
Part of the thing about Bioshock is that the game series is about immersion. It's heavily immersive. I mean, especially with all the recordings and the amount of detail that they put into the scenery.
I think what Retroid was alluding to with his previous comments were basically that with Bioshock, it's you as the main character is actually interwoven with the plot, whereas I think a lot of other games you're kind of separate from it and just kind of tinkering around with the world, as it were.
Yes, that's precisely it. It just, the whole way it was approached, it took the limitations of a linear game and wove that into a plot device and part of the background with, well, of course you go from A to B because you've got no choice. But part of the story was, of course you go from A to B. You have no choice. You are being ordered, but you don't realize it throughout the entire game. And that's what made that moment such a special game moment. And it would have to be done in such a different way in a film. I don't know how it would be pulled off.
I think another series that I can't feel would be adapted properly, even though they keep talking about doing it, is the Mass Effect series. Because any adaptation they do can only skim the surface of the events of the game.
Mm.
So much happens. True. And even if they do three films to follow the fact that there's three games, it would still, each one would only skim a tiny bit of actually what you experienced when you played the game. It'd be really hard to get the core elements settled down away from all the extra stuff that you can do that influences everything so much.
Yeah.
Throughout the series.
I think something like Mass Effect would be, it's an excellent example of why we should stop concentrating so much on film adaptations of books and look at something like Game of Thrones.
TV where, adaptation.
Yes,
where you've
exactly.
got a longer kind of series that you can actually expand into.
Yeah, you've got 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Instead of two, maybe three, pushing it if you're a big name, 4 hours, in a film. Have it as a TV series, throw the same amount of money at a 13 episode TV series, you would get something that looks absolutely really spectacular.
That would work really well.
I totally agree. Obviously, because I've been watching Babylon 5 finally with Paul B.
Right.
And obviously, it too is set in space and has a lot going on. Mm. And just because it's one of the few space series that I've now watched that isn't A, Star Trek 1, B, Farscape, or C, the new Battlestar Galactica, or Firefly, I can see.
I preferred that to Deep Space Nine.
But getting back to the hard adaptation issue, as it's a space sci-fi thing, I can see how a TV series, now having watched a lot more different sort of sci-fi space TV series, how a TV environment does offer greater scope for taking in all the niggly bits of plot elements that a film just can't do. Because a film, in a way, is, despite no matter how long it is, unless it's an 8-hour film about sleeping, which I was once read was like the longest film ever made.
It just seemed like it.
Yeah, but basically,
ironically, I fell asleep during.
Yeah. But basically, in a way, from a structure standpoint, films are short stories.
Yes.
And like a short story, a film doesn't have much time and space to convey everything that would perhaps happen in, say, a novel or, in this instance, a video game.
Yeah, in a standard film, you only have so many acts, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you would have to consider it. I mean, Gears of War could be turned into a film series quite nicely if they stick to the narrative.
Yeah.
I think Dead Space would make a Rickard Hauer film.
Dead Space would actually work quite well as films.
Yeah, they would be.
So long as it's not the same, perhaps, crew that were behind the anime tie-in films. I have watched the first one of those and never again.
I watched a trailer and that was it.
Yeah, we had, I'm not sure if we still do, we might have just kind of tried to offload it onto someone, the first tie-in anime film. And it was, if it wasn't a swear word every other word, everything else was just diabolical in terms of sort of plot and stuff compared to the actual games, and you had no sympathy for the characters whatsoever.
It must have been bad because I don't actually remember it.
We watched
awesome.
Wiped it from my memory.
We watched it with Dan and Ben when they came round ages ago. So yeah.
I remember we watched it, but I can't remember any of it.
You've erased it from your memory. It was that
exactly.
bad. Kind of like my opinion of things that have already been done as adaptations, like Street Fighter.
That was just rubbish, wasn't it? I mean, that was just an excuse to get Kylie Minogue dressed up as Cammy.
It did feel like that at the time.
I think in terms of fighting games, I think probably the most successful is probably Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Well, you have you did give yourself away, was it, last week?
I enjoyed that. Although, saying that, I did actually, I've got a guilty pleasure for the Street Fighter anime films. They're quite good.
They're truer to the games in of themselves by their very nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never actually watched them, but from what I've heard, yeah, they're much closer to what they were trying to do.
Oh, yes.
I think my favourite adaptation of a game that's been made into film, obviously, so far, has been the Silent Hill film.
Yeah, got to agree with that.
That was quite good.
While it didn't obviously follow any of the standalone actual stories of any of the games, it was the way it used the elements, bits of narrative and the setting, and actually combine it to make it a convincing horror film that I think worked. Totally disagree with the BBFC's rating of said film in this country. It's a 15. Considering the events that happen in the film and some of which is sort of graphically depicted, I personally thought it should have been an 18, but that's another story.
You should have saw it when me and Emily came out the cinema after watching that. And it's like, it's a great film. It's a great film. How the hell did it get away with a 15 rating?
Because the BBC, the BBFC, sorry, are a shower of assholes.
I still did get it. It's just, it was like, I had similar feelings. Not quite as strongly after seeing the Green Hornet film. Not why had it ever been made. That's a comic book adaptation that perhaps didn't go as well as it could have, but the fact that it got a 12 rating considering the amount of violence actually in it and references to drugs and alcohol, it was just kind of like, and maybe there just wasn't enough sex and that's why it wasn't a 15.
The BBFC first of all, as mentioned, the Irish Hour of Arseholes. Second, I will never work out how someone getting shot and killed is, say, a 12 or a 15. And yet, I used to buy comedians, tour.
Yes.
Tapes. And there were a few, like, Newman and Bedil, or, you know, Bedil and Newman.
Brilliant.
And
yeah.
They were 18 rated.
Yes. And so was Jim Davidson's.
Yes.
Yeah, but with Jim Davidson, there's a whole other thing of ratings.
But there's also Punt and Dennis as well.
Yeah.
There's an old, like, one of his early performances from the 80s, sort of Robin Williams tape I remember watching that Paul B's mum's got. So it's Robin Williams live in, like, one of the theatres in San Francisco or something in the 80s. Yeah. And that tape was 18 rated, clearly came out well after the performance by at least sort of 6 or more years.
Yeah.
Sort of like in the sort of late 80s, early 90s or something. And it's just kind of like, how is this an 18? Because if you consider the fact that something like Child's Play would have come out not that long after this particular videotape came out of Robin Williams. And obviously Child's Play's always been an 18, except for the sequels have, except for maybe like one that was for 15. But yeah. Mm. Anyway, back to games adaptations. rather BBFC's curious workings.
That's not how I'd phrase it, but yeah.
I have to say, another one I quite enjoyed the adaptation of, and you can shoot me afterwards for saying so, was Prince of Persia.
I haven't had a chance to watch the film.
That was not bad.
That was not a bad adaptation. It's definitely worth a one watch.
And incidentally, the game of that film is quite good.
Yeah, it is.
That's a strange turn of events.
Oh, it
is. I have to say, to actually get the adaptation pretty right.
Because admittedly, I missed out on playing the Sands of Time kind of trilogy.
Oh.
I gotta admit, I would be I would like to play it. It's kind of one of those things that's kind of slipped through the cracks. And, yeah, I would like to play it sometime.
Well, Sands of Time is excellent. You should really...
Roy, your Vin's really good as well. Really enjoyed that as well.
But
and also the almost cel-shaded Prince of Persia that got a lot of flack.
Yes, I actually quite enjoyed that.
I really liked it as well.
It was quite different. That was one where you had to... Yeah, it was all shell... get my words out of it. It's cel-shaded, and it was quite interesting. The actual art style as well was really...
It was very pretty.
Yeah, really nice.
But yeah, that isn't bad. We're thinking of U-Ball again.
I think, Retroid, you need to describe to us your experience of watching House of the Dead
for
a few minutes.
It looked like a terrible zero-budget student film from about the 80s. Blue zombies, you know, the kind of thing. You know, really badly painted. You know, people are obviously painted. Oh, we'll make them a little darker on the eyes and we'll paint hollows in their cheeks, even though the actor is a little bit chubby. So it's like, okay, yeah, that doesn't really work. And there were just lots of running around and then, you know, ripping off, you know, parts of people and, you know, pretending to eat them. And, you know, lots of jump cuts and in the dark. To try and hide just how terrible it looked, which it didn't, because you could plainly see how bloody awful it looked. And then I realised that, oh my God, this is actually a released film. This is the House of the Dead film that I'd heard about. I'd heard it was bad, but it didn't quite prepare me for this.
I think one of the problems, at least with the House of the Dead films, not that I've personally watched it, but I've played the games extensively, is that the games aren't exactly... great examples, astounding examples of narrative and game mechanics themselves, except for House of the Dead Overkill, which wasn't made by any of the traditional team. If you made a film of House of the Dead Overkill, obviously in an exploitation grindhouse style...
I was going to say grindhouse.
You know, it'd be absolutely fine. It'd be probably quite fabulous and get an appropriate rating from the BBC, and that's because I think they should ban it. But as long as it doesn't end up like The Human Centipede 2, everyone will be fine. The House of the Dead film, I suppose it's not a good idea when people adapt stuff like games and actually the source material that they're adapting from wasn't fabulous in the first place.
I'm kind of fine with it if it's something like House of the Dead, where you could just take the original game, you could take the property as inspiration.
Yeah.
And then do something with it. I think that would have been fine. Because if you make a House of the Dead film, people aren't going to expect Citizen Kane.
True.
I think, especially the House of the Dead, I mean, because the story is so confusing between the games anyway. The whole thing was that some... scientist's son or whatever, like dying or whatever, and the resultant outbreak of zombies is whatever his crazy arse research was basically putting together to bring back the dead kid or whatever, you know.
Yep. We need to shoot zombies. Let's work back from that.
Yeah. And not
Can
have
I just
any...
say?
Oh, go on.
No, I was going to kind of move on slightly. Kind of subject-wise, but I was going to say one. Well, it's kind of similar, but one IP that I would actually like to see made into a film, but it has to be made properly, would be Eternal Darkness.
Ooh, that would make a nice supernatural horror film. It's not like you'd have to do every combination of. Gameplay that you can do with the different gods, but that would be pretty. Yeah, that would be pretty. Is what I say.
It would be pretty.
Yeah, it'd be pretty pretty. As long as they obviously made sure it was a tight sort of multi-narrative film as well.
You have to keep in the sanity effects, though. Like walls dripping with blood and camera kind of tilting and stuff.
Hmm.
Oh, but then they'll probably have 3D to it now, though.
Oh, piss off.
Oh, that could be one of the sanity effects where everything suddenly goes 2D. So if everybody takes off their glasses, then it pops back into 3D. It's like, ha, gotcha.
Well, do you know what? It's weird. Because I've been a fan of the darkness for a while, and reading the comics and playing the two video games are two completely different things. And if I was to choose between the two for what I'd adapt into a film, I wouldn't actually go with the comics. I'd go with the games.
Hmm.
Because they're slightly more plausible in terms of how they do things. Though there is one sort of mythos element from the comics I bring in that the games has ignored, which is the whole Jackie can't have sex because there's a high chance of him actually conceiving and us dying at the same time. It irked me how they didn't properly cover that, certainly in the second game. But I'd certainly prefer if they adapted from the darkness games,
you know,
than the comics.
You know, I would really like to see that.
Because
I think the darkness doesn't get the property. It doesn't get the credit it deserves as a game. Especially the first one. That moment where his girlfriend gets shot, I thought was incredibly well done.
Yeah.
It wasn't overwrought, it wasn't overblown, it wasn't big and dramatic. It was just, he sees that, and he's lost everything.
Do you know what, I think all the people that keep calling for, like, a Crow remake,
yeah,
because they keep popping up, it's like, forget the Crow from it, why don't we just go and adapt the darkness a minute, eh? You know, yeah. then you get comic book and video game property, all your bases covered, sort of thing.
If you think about it, darkness is all, I mean, don't shoot me for saying this, but it is a bit like a cross between The Crow and a mobster film.
I could totally see that. Yes, I would agree there. Though at the same time, without the redeeming features for the protagonist that The Crow has, potentially. But...
And well, we don't always need redeeming characters.
This is true. I'm just trying to think of a game series that I think if the right writers, certainly the right writers are involved, that there's huge potential to adapt at least the more linear games into films. But I'm struggling to think outside of the ones we've already mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I think something like Left 4 Dead, I think that would actually be quite bad to adapt, to be honest.
That would be something where you would definitely have to just take it as an inspiration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you could use similar characters, but you'd be creating the snare and everything yourself.
Yeah.
And the lore.
Or even just the concept. Yeah. Or even just the concept of having like four survivors that don't actually, you know, kind of get scared and run off or anything like that. They do actually stick together because they have to.
Yeah.
Yes. And they could in the film, though, they could perhaps have had a fifth survivor who did run off and all that and then went and got very, very killed.
And then they can take their first aid kit.
Yeah!
Later.
Pipe bomb over here.
One thing I wouldn't mind sneaking in a bit with this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Representations of video games in films could also perhaps do a bit of improvement.
A little.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that applies to the media in general as well, especially TV in this country.
Mm. Yeah.
Can I tell you my first favourite representation of a video game in a film ever?
Go on.
I believe it's in the, is it 99, it's made the Godzilla film that's got Mr. Broderick in.
Oh, yeah.
I believe there's a kid in that at one point in one scene in the background playing Final Fantasy VIII on a TV. Named Quasicotal.
Cool.
That's the coolest bit of representation of a video game I've ever seen in a film.
Someone actually Well, someone must have tried with that.
I'm pretty sure it was that Godzilla film, but don't quote me 100% on that, but I'm pretty sure that was the one. So next time you watch Godzilla, maybe if you feel like it.
I actually saw that in the cinema.
You know what's kind of weird with when it comes to stuff like video games in films and whatnot? Mm. The amount of times that you see like a game being played by two characters and they're playing, you know, you obviously know kind of the system and whatnot.
Yeah.
And you look at the control pads and they're completely the wrong system.
How do they do that? I never understood how they make that kind of inaccuracy. Do they just do it to drive games fans mad with rage?
This sounds
probably
like
stock footage of the game being played.
Yeah.
So that's probably what it is, and then kind of I've got a old SNES or N64 up in the loft. I'll bring that down, pretend to play it. Yeah, that'll be fine.
It's a games controller. Just put it in the hand. And also extra points if they're using an index finger to poke at the buttons.
Yeah.
Because the number of times I've seen that, and also, even though whatever the video is that they're showing on the screen is obviously, you know, 3D and everything whizzing about, if the sound background music and sound effects for the game sounds like it's from the Defender from about 1981,
yes,
that sort of it. Just can't we just have an explosion and music, orchestral music? No. People won't associate that with a game. We have to make it sound plinky plonk from the 80s.
There's one bit in Shaun of the Dead. I think Shaun actually kind of jumps onto the game, and it's they're playing Time Splitters. Yeah. And you can actually hear, player one has entered the game. Haven't you got to do something? Oh, yeah. Player one has left the game. Kind of thing. You can't actually get it to do that in the game, but...
I think on that note, though, I'm afraid that we shall have to say goodbye. We're running out of time.
Fair enough.
I'm afraid. So it was lovely to have you all here this week and to have you, the listener, listening in. So it's goodbye from...
Goodbye from me, Paul Wood. Otherwise known as Retroid on Eurogamer.net or Super Retroid on Twitter.
And good night from me, Paul, aka Cookie. You can find me on Twitter at onearmed_cookie. You can also find me skulking around thegamejar.com. Also, if any BBC executives are listening and you know that Matt Smith is great, I am the man for the next Doctor. Just thought I'd throw that there. Thank you for listening.
Lovely. It's goodbye from me. I'm Paul Blewett. I have a Twitter named Paul Blewett, and I also have a website, paul-blewett.com.
And I'm Emily, and you can find me on Twitter at ek6891, and you can obviously find Nerd Assemble at www.nerdassemble.co.uk, at Twitter via Nerds Podcast. And you can find us on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And as I said last week, I may have made the mistake of making a Google Plus page, similar directions as Facebook. So,
if anyone wants to look.
If anyone wants to look. So that's it from all of us. And thank you for listening.
Good night.
See you next week.
Good night.